Good morning. As you know, this year the teaching team has been using the lectionary as a basis for our sermons, which means we have a choice of about 4 to 5 scriptures to use for our messages. And as you know, we're coming up to the end of the series entitled The Third Way, or How to Do Life in a Non-Binary Manner. But here's the thing. When I looked at the scripture passages for this week, they were good. Stories about the Israelites grumbling about having manna for breakfast every single day. Stories about a man who labored all day in the fields only to find out that someone who labored for only an hour got paid the same amount. And Paul's impassioned declaration that for him to live is Christ and to die is gain. It's really good stuff, but it didn't speak to me this week. And we've always said that the speaking team using the lectionary is a guideline, and there's some flexibility. And we've never really used that flexibility until now. I'm a child of the 60s. I know how to rebel. So today, instead of diving into the lectionary scriptures, we're going to be talking about Bilbo Baggins, vegetables, and various other non-sequiturs that I hope all work together to show us how to be image bearers of Christ. Oh, don't worry, there'll be scripture too. In fact, let's start with Exodus 3. I'll be reading from the Voice, and I've abridged it just a little bit. Now one day, when Moses was shepherding the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, he guided the flock far away from its usual pasture to where the mountain of God stood. There, a special messenger of the Eternal appeared to Moses in a fiery blaze from within a bush. Moses looked again and again at the bush as it blazed, but to his amazement, the bush didn't burn up. He decided to go closer and get a better look. When the Eternal One saw Moses approach, he called out to Moses from the burning bush, and Moses responded, "I'm right here." God said, "Don't come any closer. Take off your sandals and stand barefoot. This is holy ground. I am the true God, the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." A feeling of dread washed over Moses. He hid his face because he was afraid he might catch a glimpse of the true God. And God said, "The plea of Israel's children has come before me, and I have observed the cruel treatment they have suffered at the hands of the Egyptians. So go, I am sending you back to Egypt as my messenger to Pharaoh. I want you to gather my people and bring them out of Egypt." Moses responded to God, "Who am I to confront Pharaoh and lead Israel's children out of Egypt?" "Do not fear, Moses," said God. "I will be with you every step of the way." But Moses replied, "Let's say I go to the people of Israel and tell them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to rescue you.' And then they reply, 'What's his name? What should I tell them?'" God said, "I am who I am. This is what you should tell the people of Israel. I am has sent me to rescue you." Now, if you've been paying attention, you'll recognize these verses as ones that Wayne used a couple weeks ago. But it's good stuff, and I think it's okay to repeat a little bit. And this week, there are two questions in this passage that I would sort of like to zero in on. The first is, who is God? And the second is, who am I? A.W. Tozer, in The Knowledge of the Holy, says this: "What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. For this reason, the gravest question before the church is always God himself. And the most portentous fact about any man is not what he at any given time may say or do, but what he in his deep heart conceives God to be like. We tend by a secret law of the soul to move toward our mental image of God. This is true not only of the individual Christian, but of the company of Christians that composes the church. Always, the most revealing thing about the church is her idea of God." As I said, that's A.W. Tozer, And it comes from his book, The Knowledge of the Holy. What comes to our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Now that's something to chew on, isn't it? It brings to mind questions similar to those Moses posed to God. God, who are you? And who am I in the context of who you are? Now, I was originally going to launch into a great theological discourse on who and what God is, but explaining the unexplainable is more than I want to tackle this morning. That being said, I think we can all agree that God is bigger than we can ever conceive of, and with all of the collective human intelligence, our scientific understanding, and philosophical musings, we have not and cannot come close to knowing the fullness of God. The reality is, God is a bit of a mystery. And if any good is going to come out of this morning, it's likely not going to be my telling you who I believe God is, but rather it will come out of your own wrestling. And to invite you to the wrestling match, I've got some questions for you to consider. The first is, what do you know of God? Second, do you truly believe it to be true? Third, do you like him? Fourth, do you trust him? And fifth, are you willing to follow him? How you answer those questions, or whether or not you do answer those questions, will inform all of your life. It's just that important. Well, Moses posed another question that is almost as important as our concept of God. His question was, who am I? So, who are you? I think one of the great tragedies of life is we don't really know how to answer that question, do we? We've kind of lost our identity. We don't know who we are. We've confused who we are with what we do, and we've built our identity on that. Let's try an experiment. Right now, wherever you are, imagine that you are introducing yourself to a stranger. In 5 sentences or fragments thereof, how would you introduce yourself? Well, here's what most people do when they're asked. They offer their name, their profession, their family position, maybe their hobbies, and an identifying passion. For instance, hi, I'm Jenny Downing. I'm an administrator in a law office in Century City and part of the pastoral team at Ventura Vineyard. I'm married with 2 children and 5 grandchildren. I love reading, music, writing, and gardening, and I am passionate about spiritual formation. Is that really who I am? Is that who I am at the core? Because who I am at the core drives everything that I do, or at least it should. And the fact that I'm a grandmother doesn't really drive the equally true fact that I'm an administrator at a law firm. The fact that I love gardening doesn't really drive the fact that I love music. And any one of these things on its own would be kind of a shallow one-dimensional existence. So there must be more. Let's look at another example. This week on Facebook, our church administrator, Ashley Gwaltney, posed a question. Lord of the Rings or Star Wars? Of course, she raised the hackles of the Lord of the Rings fans by omitting the Hobbit movies from the survey. And I love and respect Ashley with all my heart. I do, but seriously, how can you have Lord of the Rings without the Hobbit? Little persnickety Bilbo Baggins, who almost missed the adventure of a lifetime because he forgot his handkerchief. Bilbo Baggins, who questioned why he was even on the journey, and dealt with insecurity almost every step of the way. But at a crucial moment, that same Bilbo faced down Smaug the dragon when Smaug asked him who he was. Do you remember Bilbo's answer? Here's what he said. I come from under the hill and under the hills and over the hills my paths led. And through the air I am he who walks unseen. I am the clue finder, the web cutter, the stinging fly. I was chosen for the lucky number. I am he that buries his friends alive and drowns them and draws them alive again from the water. I came from the end of a bag, but no bag went over me. I am the friend of bears and the guest of eagles. I am ring winner, the luck wearer, and a barrel rider. Is that really who Bilbo Baggins is? No. Those were slightly, maybe not even slightly, aggrandized descriptions of what he had done, and they were phrased in a way to make him appear stronger, larger, more dangerous, and more enigmatic to Smaug, who was at the moment thinking of him as a tasty appetizer. See, Bilbo was plagued with insecurity, and never were those insecurities more apparent than when he was face to face with a dragon. So with a little creative imagination, he embellished who he was to make himself bigger, because his grasp on safety and security was understandably at a low ebb. Well, we all do that, don't we? It's like the song says, it's a jungle out there and we're pretty small. And from the very beginning, we've learned to defend ourselves against the cold, hostile world, rather than to place ourselves in the hands of an invisible God who promised to be with us, but did not promise us that he would shield us from adversity. And after decades of doing so, we've learned to rely pretty heavily, if not exclusively, on ourselves, to the extent that the place in us to which God has unfettered access is pretty much unrecognized. In truth, the answer to the question, who am I? My self-constructed straw person is not it. In fact, that's not a person at all, and is called the false self. It is an illusion who stands with fist raised saying, I can do this myself. But we can't. Check this out. Every one of us is shadowed by an illusory person, a false self. This is the person I want myself to be, but who cannot exist, because God, because truth, light, knows nothing about him. And to be unknown to God is altogether too much privacy. My false and private self is the one who wants to exist outside of the reach of God's will and God's love, outside of reality and outside of life. And such a self cannot help but be an illusion. That's from Thomas Merton. Well, Bilbo understandably fell victim to what we all do. I mean, really, if you were face to face with a dragon, that might not be the best time to embrace your vulnerabilities. So we'll give him grace. But what do we do about it? Well, this is where vegetables come into the discussion. In the standard vegetable used to describe the layers we construct on top of our true selves is the onion. But there's a real problem with that analogy. You see, when we start stripping away the layers of the onion, layer after layer after layer, to get to the center, when we get there, what is there? There's nothing. What remains when I strip away is nothing. Those layers that have served me so well for decades, in fact, they're not there by accident. I've spent my life carefully constructing them. And now I'm supposed to discard them like yesterday's newspaper? I don't think so. But what if there was not nothing? But rather, what if there was something? Well, clearly we need another vegetable. And I think we've pretty much beaten the artichoke to death, and yet we're going to do it again. Unlike the onion, the outside layers of the artichoke are tough. And as one removes more and more layers, it becomes gradually more fragile, requiring more attention as the layers are removed. But the greatest difference between an onion and an artichoke is learned when all the layers have been removed. With an onion, there's nothing left, but with the magnificent artichoke, you are left with the tender, succulent heart. To me, the heart speaks of the essence of who I was created to be. and I can safely remove the layers of my false self because of the treasure that lies buried beneath those layers. My heart, my essence, the one who God uniquely created me to be. So here's a cross-section of an artichoke, just to illustrate my point. You can see that from the outside in, the artichoke has spines, outer leaves, more tender inner leaves, the choke, which serves to protect the heart, and then you have the heart itself, which comprises the essence of the artichoke, the part worth getting to. And finally, you have the stem, which is connected to the vine. It is really amazing to me how much we are like artichokes. I mean, think about it. From our most first unrequited breath, we begin to construct massive defense systems to protect ourselves. And upon that defense system, we add behaviors and defense mechanisms. Over years and years, we begin to believe that those behaviors and mechanisms and things that we do are who we actually are. But they aren't. Those things correspond to the outer leaves of the artichoke. When I'm feeling under stress or insecure, I will lean on my major areas of competence and they bolster my ego. For instance, when I'm overwhelmed, I think, well, I play the piano really well, so therefore I must have worth, right? Or if someone insults me or slights me, I remind myself that I hold a very prestigious position in a very prestigious law firm, and therefore I must have value and worth. It's kind of twisted thinking. I mean, what does one have to do with the other, really? Well, God sees us so very differently. He molded and shaped you and loved you even before the foundations of the world were set. His purpose for you is that you would be holy and unspoiled. And whenever he looks upon you, it is with favor. His desire is to be in constant communion and relationship with you. And he treasures you with an unquenchable love. Can you just think about that for a moment? The creator of the universe thinks of you with unquenchable love. You are, after all, God's beloved. And I have this feeling that he looks at our outer layers with compassion and probably a little bit of humor. Like, you know, the child who tries to dress itself in crazy mismatched clothing. But as parents, we look and we see beneath that to the sweet child beneath. And we just want to pick her up and draw her into our lap and maybe read a book to her or something. In order to understand who I really am, I need to peel back the leaves of the artichoke that are me. I need to dig beneath the protective choke and look at who I am at the core of my being. In other words, who was I destined or created to be? My authentic or true self in today's terms, and in spiritual terms, the self that God created and has deep relationship and connection with. At my very essence, once I peel all else away, I am God's beloved. And there I learn to be me with God, and everything I do or am can then come from a solid foundation, a true foundation. Well, in the beginning, mankind got off to kind of a bad start, didn't he? In the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve made a mistake that was far more elemental than eating the apple. The mistake they made was subtle. They had an open invitation to be like God. We all do. But the mistake they made, and the mistake we make as well, was listening to the whispers of the serpent, who skewed their understanding of what that meant. He invited them to assume God's role rather than his character. The knowledge of good and evil was at that point meant for God and God alone. We want to have the same freedom, authority, and power that he has, instead of what was designed for us, which was to pursue his ways, his motivations, and his character. So we have a big decision to make, a critical decision because it informs everything that follows it. I can make the choice of doing the work, of digging through the layers to locate my true self, And from there, let that true self inform my relationships, my goals, my actions, my thoughts, or my deeds. From the place of communion with God as my beloved, life becomes an adventure that we pursue together, God leading, me following. That's how it was meant to be. Or we can continue to live from outside the choke, defended and wary of life. Don't get me wrong, even from that place, we can do good things, except they all tend to fall short. It's like Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, suppose I speak in the language of human beings or of angels. If I don't have love, I'm only a loud gong or a noisy cymbal. Or suppose I have the gift of prophecy. Suppose I can understand all the secret things of God and know everything about Him. And suppose I have enough faith to move mountains. But if I don't have love, I'm nothing at all. Suppose I give everything to poor people. And suppose I give myself over to the difficult life so that I can brag about it. But if I don't have love, I get nothing at all. Let's put those verses in today's speak. Imagine that I was able to speak persuasively and eloquently. If what I say isn't rooted in God's love deep inside of me, what I have to say is full of half-truths and opinions and is generally ugly and grating. Or, imagine I was able to tell the future or could explain all the mysteries of God, or that I had so much faith that I could defy the laws of science and nature. If I could do all that, but I did it without love, it's completely worthless. Or maybe I'm able to give vast amounts of money and resources to the poor, or I champion the marginalized or work to reconcile those groups who hate one another. Even these things, if I did them out of my own good intentions, as opposed to having them arise out of the love of God, they will fall short and fail to do any good at all. Do you get it? Unless everything we do comes as a result of the deep love that God has within us, it is basically well-intended garbage. These days, it's easy to see we live in a broken world filled with broken people. Our defended walls enclose around us and they hold us captive, and what we see all around us converts. We are living too small. It takes courage to break down those walls, courage to lay down the defenses, our competencies, our passions, everything that we do well, and become dependent on God. It takes courage to hand the shovel to God and ask Him to excavate our carefully constructed selves to show us what lies beneath it all and what we were meant to be. But if we take a look at what's inside, if we have the courage to peel back those layers, peel back the layers of defense and false selves that we have piled on top of the self that God loves so dearly, then something beautiful can happen. We will no longer strive to do good works of our own initiative, in our own strength, and for our own purposes. No, rather the things that we do will be motivated by God, breathed on by God, blessed by God, and accomplished by God. And then when that happens, anger gives way to shalom. Grasping gives way to serving. Demanding rights gives way to justice. Demanding fairness gives way to mercy, and hatred gives way to love. In the world we're living in these days, it seems like the norm is for people to react quickly from a place of defense or even offense. The invitation of Jesus is to breathe, to pause, to remember who and whose we are. Reconnect with Him. Lean into our belovedness, and from that place, live and move and act in step with Jesus in grace and love. That's the third way, the way of laying down our brokenness and living as the beautiful creation we were intended and destined to be. Take a last look at the artichoke who matures beyond its outer defenses. The very choke that kept the heart safe becomes nourished by the heart and blossoms into a flower that is really quite beautiful. We can be like that. We can stop acting and living out of our brokenness and live as those whose identity is the beloved of God. That is who we were created to be. Thank you.